And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus's crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nueva Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario.
Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affol drives forward. Affol. Affol scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch, oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. We are hitting you up for the, as I'm just going to take the words right out of our friend Ralph Schudel's mouth, for the final time in 2018, but thankfully, fortunately, not the final time ever. Not fortunately for all of you, our listeners, I'm sure your lives would be on the aggregate better if we were never to record this podcast again, but you're stuck with us. I'm sorry. And you're stuck with this week, myself, Bart Logan, Alex Stanek. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. The crew are saved. Another season in the books and another season to be had next year, so I can't wait.
Certainly the case. We've also got Ralph Schudel. Ralph, how you doing?
Good. I've found myself in a long hole of Googling NFL Europe teams because we were talking about that before the show.
Oh, yeah. That's we'll save that for a little bit later. That's a treat for you boys and girls. There also might be another tweet treat awaiting for you, you know, later in the show. You're just going to have to listen. That's whether Patrick Gouldan's going to join us. We'll see. But until then, we've got a game that, unfortunately, that we've got to talk about. But then I think we'll move on to look at the greater implications. But, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't address, you know, the fact why this is the final recording of the Massive Report podcast for 2018. And that's that crew dropped the second leg, shit the bed, some might even say, in Harrison, New Jersey on Sunday, falling 3-0 to the Red Bulls after coming into the game up 1-0 aggregate. Not the result I certainly was hoping for when I crammed into a sedan in the middle seat between two people in the back seat, and you know, we rode out 9 hours out to Harrison, New Jersey, and then back the following day. But you know, it's on the whole, you know,
for the love of the game, Bart. For the
exactly,
love of the game.
Was it an unexpected result? Ralph and Alex, what were your thoughts and takeaways from that? Ralph, why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, you know, so very familiar situation to another MLS Cup year, if you would think about it, in 2015 when Crew SC went into Harrison, New Jersey, holding on to a first leg advantage. And, you know, this Red Bull team is very good. You're not going to hold them off the score sheet. You know, Alex Meol broke through in the 17th minute. Off of a Sean Davis free kick that was initially credited to Sean Davis, or pardon me, Aaron Long, but then it deflected off of Mule on the way in. And then Daniel Royer in 3 minutes, the 3 minutes of damage that potentially put Crew SC away. Actually, no, it did put Crew SC away. Struck on two well taken strikes in the 73rd and 76th minute. It just, you know, Crew SC's good luck, you know, call it. You know, good luck, call it good fortune. You know, it's been a long and exhausting season on and off the field. You know, and it seemed like, and maybe you could talk about it too, Bart, the atmosphere in Harrison was pretty out of sight, at least on TV. It looked and sounded that way. But yeah, I mean, a good season all. Unfortunately, Crew SC crash out in the second leg of the semifinal.
Yeah, the atmosphere, it was definitely, actually, you know, I want to give credit to Noron Tor first, more than, I mean, there were good, at least 200, it seemed like, away fans there up in the upper rafters behind the net on the far side. And, you know, all credit, especially, although we didn't ride out, on the Noron Tor bus, to Robert Rovic, Robbie, of Crew Union, who quarterbacks all those and, did a hell of a job, getting the folks out there to up the lads and just, you know, it was, you know, good on New York. That's the first time that I'd personally ever seen a game in at Red Bull Arena. I want to credit their staff, as well, the way that they handle opposing fans, it was terrific. Now there were some fans that decided, you know, there weren't any really direct altercations, but the oddest thing was there was a fan who decided, as some of you who are steeped within Save the Crew might know, Ethan McKinley. The guy who grew an enormous beard throughout this past year, they stole his Columbus Till I Die beanie while he was in line for the bathroom. Just someone like grabbed it and thought it would be hilarious and ran off. And it's just like, why you gotta do me like that? Especially after we came out there and then, you know, we came a long way just to lose. But let's, you know, that's what was going on out in the stands. The fans for Columbus never really, you know, had a chance to get in that game because Crew never really seemed in that game. I was surprised to see that we managed four shots on goal because, you know, I sat and turned to people at the end of that game and said, I don't know if we got a single shot on goal.
Yeah, it was a rough game. The Crew choked. I mean, I'm not sure there's any... Mm-hmm. Easier way to put it than that, you know, kinder way to put it than that. They didn't get it done. But, man, it is so hard to be upset given everything that's happened in the last couple months. Had things not gone the way that they did, or had this just been another normal season, I would have been livid after that game. I thought they didn't do virtually anything right. The defense was making mistakes. The midfield didn't seem like they were all on the same page. We had nothing really going in the attacking third. So it was difficult. But when you take everything into consideration, everything that's happened in the last, I'd say, 2 or 3 months now, it's really hard to have any beef about anything. Before we were even in the playoffs, I said, you know, if we don't make the playoffs, I'm not upset. If we make the playoffs and we get knocked out in the first round, I'm not upset. If we, you know, go farther, that'd be great too. But I'm sticking with that. You know, it sucks. The result sucks. It sucks that we're not going to get to go to Moffray Stadium next weekend. But all things considered, amazing year and no complaints.
Yeah, and it was disappointing. You know, on you know, lots of levels. And I think one of the few, you know, the sort of there's the implication, obviously, that this is the last game under Greg Berhalter. And we'll get into that a little bit, you know, later on. But it did seem like a game where, you know, it was almost, it was like they put everything that they had left in the tank for the rest of the season, the playoffs, into getting that win in Columbus last weekend, and that there's just nothing left. There didn't seem like there's any sense of urgency whatsoever from this team up until, you know, maybe the final minutes of the season. And if it is the final game for Greg Berhalter, of the Greg Berhalter era here in Columbus, certainly an unceremonious way to do so.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you know, you looked at the first half and New York did what they wanted. They wanted to kind of assert their will, press high up the field. If Crew SC, if they lost the ball, they wanted to bring pressure towards whoever dispossessed the New York attacker, and they did a great job. They did a masterful job about it. You know, Bart is a hockey guy. You can kind of talk about it. You know, where it felt like a power play, very much so. That, you know, there were always two men on one ball carrier trying to dispossess them, and they asserted their will. This has been kind of the MO of Chris Armas, Jesse Marsh, even Petke to an extent when he was there. You know, this is New York Red Bull soccer, and this is what they do. You know, and Berhalter seemed to not have much of an answer for it. And again, you know, obviously Greg could come out with a great game plan, talk a big talk, but ultimately it's his players that have to go execute. I think Greg did a great job adjusting in the second half. Obviously you saw that, you know, that this has been par for the course for Greg, is that he's a great second half coach. He's very good at making adjustments when he needs to. You know, and look no further than the Toronto game earlier on this season when he made the FIFA triple substitution that ended up working out for him. So that was a great thing. But, you know, I think Greg Berhalter, I'm not going to feel, you know, if you look back at it, and I mean, we all know it's the worst kept secret in U.S. soccer right now. If you look back at it, this is not the game I remember Greg Berhalter on. You know, I remember him for a lot of great things, being a very wise player, you know, and he's, you know, but it was tough. You could talk about it at the end of the game that, you know, that press conference that he did, you know, Greg, usually when you're sitting in a Greg Berhalter press conference, it's a very matter-of-fact type of situation. You know, it's just, we look at what happened on the game, we don't speculate, and Greg left. You know, he was weirdly emotional. A lot of folks said that they saw him kind of wipe away a tear, or at least kind of make a gesture that, you know, it's not like I'm crying, I've just got dirt in my eye kind of deal. But, you know, Greg showed some emotion and kind of gave a little bit of a tip that this could be the end.
Yeah, I think, and by the way, we've been joined by Patrick Gould. And Patrick, glad to have you, and we'll toss this to you. As you've watched, I know, you know, a lot of people have characterized, you know, Greg Berhalter's comments post that game as, you know, maybe reflective. What are your takeaways from that? And you know, what do we think? Is this, in fact, the last game from Greg Berhalter?
Well, he's so I only got the chance to talk to him on Monday when the press availability, but I got the distinct sense that this is someone who is who's looking to the next thing. I just get the sense that this is the last game that Greg coaches for the team, and I think that the U.S. national team is in his future. It seems like it's some sort of certainty. And as we look at some of the things around the league with, say, you know, the LA Galaxy, you know, they're still in process. I think that it's, you know, he's going to the national team, and I don't know how long that's been in the works, but he's kind of tying up loose ends here.
And so I guess, you know, if that's the case, and again, we seem to all think that's the case, you know, where do we, you know, maybe we save, no, let's just talk about it now. So what do you, when you're going to look back and think about the Greg Berhalter era, how do you characterize it? I think there are, you know, arguments that, you know, look, as impressive and, you know, as fun as the soccer it was that he had this team playing, when they were playing on this highest level, it was a team that, you know, only gave you little bits of that potential, but never quite reached it. And that's not just, you know, the failure to win an MLS Cup, but it just seemed like this team would only give you a taste of what they were really ever capable of.
Yeah, I think that's true. So that, you know, the Greg Berhalter era is mixed. You didn't win an MLS Cup. You didn't really come close to a supporter shield. You know, of course, two of the best seasons in MLS history were back-to-back with Toronto's 2017 and then the New York Red Bulls 2018. And Atlanta United, you know, right up there with them this season. So I think you look at a coach who didn't necessarily have the ability to spend in several different areas. So you don't see tremendous transfer fees like you might see from Atlanta or LA or some of those other teams. Or you don't necessarily see the investment in the academy for whatever reason. And it's hard to know how much Precourt was really willing to spend. You saw some of that, but you know, the academy pipeline couldn't match what, say, New York Red Bull was doing. It's a case where, you know, you're dealing with not a lot of weapons, and then able to be consistently very good to sometimes great over the course of four or five seasons. It's that track record's impressive, and I think that it's going to feel like a missed opportunity compared to getting a cup or no open cup, or not really performing the best in the regular season.
Well, and I think that he leaves on good terms, though, and I think that's important. For a lot of Crew fans, we haven't had a coach that's left on good terms in quite a while. I guess Ziggy kind of did, but kind of not, depending on who you ask and what their take on everything was, especially after the draft and everything like that. Greg, the door is always open for him in Columbus, and the U.S. national team job is not a long-term gig. Whether he decides to go to LA at the end of that or go overseas or go somewhere else, who knows? But I think you'll see fans clamoring for him to come back someday, and I think that's something that's going to be interesting to watch. In the meantime, you know, I think that they will get somebody in who can keep things rolling the way they are. My money's on Josh Wolf. I think he's going to be our next head coach. I think that Greg Berhalter maybe tipped his hand a little bit about that in the press conference after the game, where he said that they had already identified a lot of targets for next season and things like that. I'm not sure that you would identify targets if you were thinking that the head coach of the Columbus Crew was going to be some random person who might not play the same system. My guess is that Wolf will kind of pick up where Greg left off, maybe make some slight changes to the system, but largely keep things intact. And that we'll see the Berhalter system live on beyond Greg. But I do think Greg is probably off to the national team. I think he's a good fit for that organization. It's going to be interesting to me to see if he can institute his system in the small amount of time that he's given. These national team coaches only get a week here, a week there with the players. Getting them into the system is going to be challenging. We've seen some players take 6 months to kind of learn Greg's system when they're training on it every day. So getting that kind of consistency with the players, figuring out where they all are with each other, and having that kind of natural chemistry that we have in Columbus with national team players is going to be challenging. But overall, I think Greg will do well with the national team. I think Josh will do well in Columbus. And I think 2019 is going to be a great year.
Just a real quick comment on that. At the end of the press conference, he talked a little bit about the media availability on Monday. He talked a little bit about that, and he was asked who would be making decisions as these roster dates come across. And he kind of paused for a little bit and then said he would. I think that I would agree that, you know, if the system's following, if the system, there's continuity there, then you're looking at somebody like Josh Wolf. But I did find it interesting that Greg has commented that he will be in charge for these decisions, which, you know, that and Grant Wall's comment, tweet about the national team coach being named before the end of the year kind of coincides that maybe there's a little bit for continuity for the Crew as Greg leaves.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that I want to kind of praise Greg on for his, you know, tenure with Crew SC is that, you know, he was adaptive. And that was one of the things that we, you know, criticized him early on for, you know, his lack of willing to kind of change things up and kind of adapt to his, you know, opponents. And I think Greg kind of learned that way and grew up It was kind of fun to watch Berhalter grow up in front of our eyes. He did a really, really great job, and I think was a great example to young coaches on how to do it. You know, go to Europe, come back, you know, see what I've learned, see what I continue to learn. I really liked just kind of seeing his adaptive nature, and I'm curious, you know, if he does end up with the United States national team, which, you know, all signs point to yes. Like you guys said, that, you know, it's a very short time for these players when they're in camp to learn a system. And, you know, I think Alex said this just a few moments ago that, you know, it takes people 6 months or so to learn a system. And, it's, you know, you see what these players can do under him. I mean, you think about Jonathan Mensah last year, who was, you know, hands down, everybody was calling for his head and, you know, saying get him off the team. Well, you know, it's like it finally clicked this year. He had moments of brilliance underneath the system. Giassi Zardes.
Oh, dominant.
Know, yeah, he was dominant. Giassi Zardes, who scored 4 goals, I think, in the course of 2 years and was playing right back last season for L.A., has gone on to win Comeback Player of the Year awards. Will Trapp has grown up even more so in front of our eyes. And a young player like Artur is, you know, doing wonderful things too. But, you know, you see what the system does and the coaching staff from Greg Berhalter to Josh Wolf, you know, and from the top down, essentially. And, you know, I think this team is in good hands. I believe, too, that, you know, Josh Wolf is a great candidate for this position. And I don't really see them going with an outside hire moving forward.
It will be certainly interesting to watch. And I think those are the points, you know, Ralph, that make it that are where, you know, Greg Berhalter differentiates and where, you know, from other candidates potentially for that U.S. men's national team job, and for why, you know, even if this team never really got over the hump, and you know, he wasn't able to bring that MLS Cup, why he is was such an attractive candidate for any of those guys. And that's his ability to bring out, you know, the best out of players. I mean, you look at the guys, I mean, throughout his tenure running this team. I mean, he brought out the best out of Pipe Higuain. A guy who's fairly new on that, but, you know, Kai Kamara, you go with Ethan Finley's having his best seasons of there, Justin Muram, dominant player. You look at, yeah, a guy like Jonathan Mensah, who last year just looked like a horrible, you know, horrible waste in terms of, you know, the money that they spent to bring him in. And then this year, you know, obviously a little bit biased looking at black and gold glasses, but, you know, I think he could have had, should have had probably some more serious consideration, you know, for one of the better center backs in MLS. He put together a dominant performance. I think credit should also go to Jonathan Mensah, obviously, for the work that he put in to be able to function well in that system. But I think that's you know, what differentiates Berhalter and what makes him such an attractive candidate for the national team, because what we seem to be seeing in MLS it is, you know, for lack of a better word, or for some other teams, maybe it becomes an arms race where, it's who can you buy? What, you know, what big name players are, you know, not necessarily big name players, but, you know, I don't know if there's going to be a niche for a team that, you know, has a budget that goes and does a good job of scouting and, you know, getting good player, you know, good players, but, you know, relative unknowns. I don't know if MLS is going to be a league where a team like that is going to really be able to make runs or win MLS Cups when you've got teams like Atlanta spending the money that they're doing, your New Yorks, you know, Los Angeles Galaxy and FC. It's going to be, you know, increasingly harder, I think, for teams, even with, you know, the salary cap, to, you know, for parity to really exist. And that's why I think, you know, the fact that Greg Berhalter managed to, be punching above his weight, every year with this team, I think that's what made him such an attractive candidate for the U.S. men's national team. And, what makes me optimistic about that program going into the future.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Well, we were talking about, you know, some of the guys that really came to flourish under Red Berhalter's system, and we see that, you know, reflected this year in a couple of the awards. Zach Steffen winning best goalkeeper and best 11. And Giassi Zardes, as you alluded to earlier, Ralph, the comeback player of the year, popping in, I think, about 16, 17 more goals than he did last year. So let's talk a little bit about those awards. Let's start with Zach Steffen, and let me quick say this because and then I'll just hand it off to you guys. I love Zach Steffen. I think he had a better year last year than he did really this year, and my tinfoil hat belief is that the league wanted him, is giving him all these awards, best goalkeeper, best 11, to drive up his transfer value for when he leaves this fall or this winter, which I believe will happen too.
But it was the player vote that pushed him over the edge. So
that's true. This is very true.
I think this is a case where he's a guy that has earned tremendous respect from a certain segment of the league. And, you know, I know there's some debate about his advanced stats and them not being at the top, such as Tim Melia or Stafford Fry really having some very good advanced stats for goalkeepers, which I think they're excellent goalkeepers. But unlike other parts of advanced sports soccer analytics, I am not wholeheartedly behind goalkeeper stats because I would like to see a little bit more proof that they're predictive. I think he's only going to get better. I think Zach is, he's under team control for three more years. That, you know, there's no rush to do a transfer this winter. However, by the time this summer rolls around next winter, then the clock's ticking. You're hitting that 2-year mark. If you want to, he'll want to move. If you want those kind of values, then we'll have to go from there.
Well, and I also think that because he's a U.S. national team player, that's going to affect the voting as well and affect his valuation as a player. So as long as he keeps getting called up and continues to be the number one for the U.S. national team, I think that's a big marketing win for the team that signs him. So his value in the summer, I agree. I think it'll be higher than it'll probably be at any other point, at least during his time in Columbus. So you might as well move him then. It'll be interesting to see what they do from a kind of squad building standpoint this offseason with guys like Steffen and honestly even with Will Trapp. I mean, I wonder if Trapp might look to Europe at some point. I'm not sure that will happen, but it's probably now or never for him. I'm not sure how all that will play out, but definitely something to keep in mind. Steffen deserves it too. I think from the standpoint of looking at whether or not to sell him, if he wants to go, I think you let him go. I wouldn't try to make him stay here when he doesn't want to. And if I were him, I'd move just so that you can test yourself. I mean, he's a national team caliber goalkeeper now. He needs to play against the best. That's still not Major League Soccer. So sell him on, reinvest that money in some younger players and go from there.
I will also say, just from the standpoint of, the sheer schadenfreude that we got to get from every other team, specifically you had Fry over there in Seattle, subtweeting about the result of the, votes for goalkeeper of the year. And, lots of other arguments about Zach Steffen. To be on the other side, finally, is Columbus, for everything that this franchise went through this year and this fan base, to be able to kind of, smile and do the "you mad bro" at the other teams was a little bit fulfilling.
It's true. I to be bluntly honest, I think Stephen Fry is very underrated. He might be the better goalkeeper at this point in his career, because I think Zach has a bit of a reputation. I'm not necessarily sure that he's advanced past MLS yet. That time is coming. I think it's rapidly approaching. And I think the reason that Zach would transfer would be because he wants to. I think he's getting to the point in his career that he's ready to do that again. He has enough reps that he feels comfortable with that. But Columbus is going to get what they want out of that value. $3.9 million was not enough. Granted, he probably wouldn't have gotten the work permit to go to the championship. But there's other teams that are probably looking around and trying to see if they could grab the U.S. number one at the age of 23, 24, which is quite impressive.
And looking at the other end, Jossy Zardes, obviously, you know, coming into the season, the trade, sending away Ola Kamara, 16 and 18 goals in 2 seasons with the Black and Gold. There's obviously, you know, a lot of people were not happy with that deal, with that result. And of course, Jossy Zardes' value really couldn't have been, you know, much lower coming off those two anemic seasons in Los Angeles. And he goes and scores more goals than Ola Kamara ever did in a single season for Columbus. And, you know, obviously very rightly deserves and earns Comeback Player of the Year. Thoughts on Jossy Zardes and his future in a post Greg Berhalter system, post Greg Berhalter Columbus Crew? Can we expect him to be that productive, recognizing the difference that Greg Berhalter has made for every striker who's played as the primary number nine in the system, when you see the before and after results?
You know, I don't know. I hope they take a look at Zardes and figure out what they're exactly looking for in a striker. He scored a lot of goals for the Black and Gold, but there were periods of time where I thought, you know, we could really use a striker with a little bit of different characteristics. I'm not sure if that is something that they need to factor in or not. I still think that the system that Berhalter used almost requires some sort of a forward that has target man capabilities. I mean, you almost need to find a Kai Kamara type player for that system. Because if you can't play the ball through the middle, the striker's basically going to have nothing to feed off of. I think that's basically what we saw in New York, is we just could not get the ball to Zardes in a way that he could convert that chance into a goal. So I hope they take a look at him. He's an amazing player. He's incredibly talented. He works well in certain games, in certain situations. I'm just not sure that he works in all games, in all situations. And I'm not sure that you want a player like that leading the line for you as the number nine, as your starting striker that you're investing all this money in. So definitely deserving of his Comeback Player of the Year award. I think that he is an excellent MLS level striker. I'm just still not 100% sure that Columbus Crew is the right fit for him. I think that there are other systems he might flourish in, and I think that we might be better suited with someone who has a little bit different characteristics.
So do you have to cash in now and try to, you know, move him now when his value is at his highest and can get a good return? Or, you know, can Crew afford to wait on him?
Well, I mean, it depends on what Dr. Pete does. I mean, if Dr. Pete decides that he's going to open up the purse strings and wants to sign a big name striker of some kind, then yeah, I think you cut him loose and move on. If you want to wait till the summer transfer window to make a move like that, then maybe you hold off. I think that we're going to spend money this offseason. I think that the new ownership group is going to want to make their mark immediately, do something that's going to get people excited. I think the best way to get people excited is sign a big name striker, sign somebody who's going to put goals on the board, sign somebody who's going to make highlight reels and is going to make the nightly news. That's what I would do if I were them. I think Zardes, he's 27 years old right now. He's the starting striker for the U.S. national team by some accounts. And so he'll have plenty of suitors. They'll be able to get a really good price for him. And I would take it. I'd throw that money back in. maybe spend it on other positions, and then sign a big name DP striker. Go out, get somebody from Europe. Get somebody that has name recognition. I'm not going to save Falcao because that's a joke at this point.
Because he's not a target man, obviously.
Well, he could do a job. But in all seriousness, I think that you need to go and get someone who really fits the system. I think under Precourt, we had this whole thing where you have to balance the financials and balance what you can get with that and try to find somebody who works in the system for the money that you have. I'm not sure that the money aspect is going to be as important going forward. I think that our ownership group, especially early on, is going to be very willing to give whoever the coach is, whether it's Josh Wolf or somebody else, the resources that they need to compete for trophies. I think that's going to be the goal moving forward, is compete for trophies. And so I think they're going to invest like a lot of other teams have invested. I would really like to see them go out and, you know, sign somebody who's really talented. I think this next year, get somebody who's going to bring folks in. Either go super young like Atlanta's done, or go super old like LA's done. But get somebody who's going to put butts in seats.
Yeah, I'll disagree to some extent with that. One, I'm not sure how much market there is for Zardes. I think there's some. But I think that there's an idea that it's priced into the system, that you have someone like Greg, who's the striker whisperer, and you know, you saw Ola, you know, he scored, but Kai, he really struggled in New England when he was misused, and so I think there's a level of understanding that you have to get the best out of them. I think it's also a case that you know, if Josh Wolf is the coach, and there is some continuity there, that a lot of that instruction about how to perform best in that role came from Josh. He's the attacker whisperer. Ethan Finley, Justin Miram, Ola, Jossi, they all talked about Josh's ability to get the best out of players as far as technique wise. So, you know, as you know, it's not one for one, because Josh Wolf would then be the head coach, and then he wouldn't necessarily have that time for instruction. His time would be taken up elsewhere. But still, you have that kind of continuity. Then you don't necessarily need to sign money on a striker, where you also don't necessarily have the flexibility, because right now you have Federico Higuain. He's coming back unless he chooses to retire. He has a contract, and you have two other designated players. One, you're either buying down Jonathan Mensah's contract again with some TAM, or you're buying down Pedro Santos's contract with some TAM, or we don't know what the transfer would look like to complete the Milton Valenzuela deal. So
next question: is Milton Valenzuela, because that he's not a sure thing.
I at this point, I would say Milton Valenzuela is a very sure thing.
I think that so
this is a case where Greg did talk a little about that, and he said that, you know, is there a deal in place if you want to execute on it for Milton Valenzuela? And he said yes. And would it be very hard to do that? And he said no. It was very quick. The understanding that I have with that is that it's a deal to manage costs for both ends of the party, and it's not necessarily a little bit of trickery. It's to kind of balance some cash flows for both sides. So, you know, the Crew gets some salary cap relief a little bit, and then you know, his Argentine club gets cash spread out a little bit. I think it was a case where it's a deal constructed to make both sense for both sides of the equation. So I would not be worried about Milton, but I don't know what that contract in 2019 looks like, how much his fee would be amortized. So I think if they look to bring in a big name, I don't think that target comes in the winter. I don't think that that Greg has been looking in that market with the possibility of a sale not necessarily happening, with the continuation of the pre-court level of spending as a possibility. So I just don't think it's functionally possible, even if you have the Edwards group really wanting to spend big, which it wouldn't surprise me with the Haslam-type money that he goes for something a little bit more pricey in the transfer market in, say, South America, and goes in an Atlanta light direction rather than scooping from the bargain bin, trying to find players that, you know, they can spend money on and get a return.
Carlos Tevez.
Yeah. He's 34. There is no return on Carlos Tevez at this point.
And that, there is and zero. None.
And that's the point that, and you know, maybe it's just a function of my, you know, being kind of a Cleveland sports fan and you know, wanting to not just buy the best team. And there was a recognition and appreciation of what Greg Berhalter was able to do with unearthing the gems that he was able to find. And certainly, you know, from a business aspect, you know, Jimmy Haslam, Pete Edwards, they're going to appreciate the likes of, you know, the Arturs and those guys that they're able to find and sign for a relatively low number and then, you know, be able to eventually sell on and make a nice profit, but still get the good years, or, you know, prime, maybe not quite the prime years, but prime years for some other guys. And I don't think, and I certainly don't want to see that, and I don't know, maybe, you know, winning races or, you know, fixes everything. So maybe I'm saying that now and being snooty. And then, you know, if we're winning with a whole bunch of 34-year-old ex-Premier League guys, I'd be on the bandwagon. But I think for the long term, for the sustainability of this club, for this team, you know, in the future, I don't think that they can ever really count on, we can count on and should count on them just being a big spending team. That's just going to, I think, you know, certainly when there's an opportunity to splash the cash that makes sense, that's a guy like, and really, even though, you know, we don't want to compare too much to Atlanta, I look at Joseph Martinez. That was a guy, obviously, that they spent a lot of money on, but they're getting some years in his prime, and they are going to get a boatload of cash for him when they do sell him off. Likewise for Miguel Almiron. But the smart investments, as much as it'd be fun to see his lot on and that kind of stuff, I don't want to see this team buying the 36-year-old for $12 million, and so we just see, you know, this is how Zlatan or you know, David Villa wants to just, you know, play out their last couple of years. I want someone who's got motivation, who's got drive, who wants to score all the goals because they eventually want to get bought by a Champions League team.
Well,
I think that's going to be the most success.
I will comment, and this brings up a memory that I have of when Rooney was coming in, and granted, I'm not necessarily looking for when you know, looking for players that are over the hill, so to speak, in their top leagues. But I remember Alex saying that Rooney wouldn't necessarily have the drive to perform, which I thought was a ridiculous comment at the time, and it's only proven to be more ridiculous because I think it proves to show that Alex had no comprehension of watching Rooney ever, because that guy has he gives 110% to his hair plugs, so there is
he's
no
like
time.
Tobias.
there is, yes, exactly. There is no time that Wayne Rooney does not give 110%. It may not be useful, but the desire was always there. Much like David Villa, I think these are players that could be useful in a certain situation. I think that if you look at where the money is being spent, Atlanta has 70,000 people in their stadium, and so they can afford to pay at the top end of the market and get it back in ticket sales. But if you also look at their academies and the people that they're bringing in and the way that they're running them, that's where, you know, Columbus is really going to thrive. I think that if not that Columbus has the Georgia market, the depth that's in Georgia. However, I think that if you expand, and I think that we're going to talk a little bit about this later with another team moving into Ohio, if you look to expand and have outreach, serious outreach in Cleveland, in other parts of Ohio, that you can start building a pipeline that gets you solid talent to fill out your roster.
So I have to respond. I have to respond to the Rooney thing. I have to jump in here on this. I think that the problem with MLS is you never know what you're going to get. If you look at a guy like Andrea Pirlo when he was with Juventus, he was the heart and soul of that team for years, brought them from a mid-table team all the way up to the Scudetto champions back-to-back-to-back, Champions League finals, the whole nine yards. And then he came to New York and drank wine and showed up late for training and wouldn't jump if a goal was heading directly over his head on a corner kick. So you had issues like that, and we've seen this with a bunch of other players. Rafa Marquez for his time here.
Gerard.
You also had Juninho when he was with New York Red Bull just briefly before they canned him because he was so lazy. And you could even make the argument a little bit with Ibrahimovic that it was one of these situations where he never wanted to play on certain pitches because he didn't want to risk injuring himself, and it really didn't matter to him that much. And now he's looking like he's heading out back to Europe. So it's always hard to judge. I think that if you get the right player who is past it in a lot of ways in Europe, they can be very successful. It's always hard to judge that. And it's a lot of understanding where their motivations are before you kind of make that move. But, I mean, when you look at the ownership group that we have coming in here, you know, you talk about the owner of the Cleveland Browns and a local owner here in Columbus in Pete Edwards, who's been connected to this team since literally it started. And you look at the kind of money that the Haslams routinely spend in Cleveland, it's not hard to believe that they're going to go out and get a huge name player. The third string quarterback for the Cleveland Browns earns about $2.5 million a year. The third string, that third string salary would put a single player in the top 10 in overall compensation for Major League Soccer in 2018, 2019. So you can do a lot with not that much in MLS when you compare it to the salary in NFL. So I think that there would be no problem for Jimmy Haslam to go out and throw $4 million at a player. And if it doesn't work out, they don't really care because they're paying the backup quarterback for the Browns four times that for him to sit on the bench behind Baker Mayfield. So I think that there is a lot of opportunity. We'll have to wait and see how things go, but it would not surprise me at all if they go out and make a statement signing this first off season or this first season and really just say, hey, this is who we are. We're not Anthony Precourt. You're not going to be seeing that we're going to be signing players you've never heard of. We're going to get names you've heard of. We're going to get superstar talent, and we're trying to make a mark in this league. So we'll see what happens with it, but I am very optimistic about the future and think that the days of us having to Google some of these guys and find out that we're basically paying them next to nothing are largely over.
Well, while Cruz, you know, figuring out what sort of mark they're going to make in this league, we also do have to, you know, recognize that Ohio, it's not a one-team state anymore, and FC Cincinnati made the first of many marks that they'll be making in MLS last night with the reveal of their new crest. And guys, I just want to say, should we just concede, like, just give them those two losses immediately right now in the Hell is Real Derby? How can we compete with this powerhouse team from Cincinnati that has a very good adult, big, good boy crest?
You know, no disrespect, especially since friend of the show Alex Steck is now with
all disrespect. Ignore him, Alex. This is all disrespect.
Okay. Yeah. Nope. No disrespect to Alex Steck. She's a lovely lady and a very nice person. So, yeah, I honestly put it out on Twitter the other day, or that day actually yesterday, that I have no idea what they're doing. I thought the USL logo was very good.
It wasn't.
I thought it was good. I thought it was good compared to what they just unveiled on Monday.
Well, yeah.
I thought it was good. I don't understand the look. And you know, I'm sure Alex is going to touch on it because it's got him written all over it, but man, we got to do away with the badge explanations on Twitter because those graphics are just getting downright sad now.
Oh, can I just go? Is this my time to just go?
It's your time to shine, baby. Let it happen.
So,
a lot, baby.
Okay. So let's just try to go through this in order. So first of all, the worst redesign in my eyes anyway, and some people might disagree with me on this, for any soccer team in the world in the last 5 to 10 years was the Juventus rebrand that they did, whatever, 2 years ago. And they tried to sell themselves.
I will fight you on that.
They tried to sell themselves as like a lifestyle brand. And they were pitching this as, oh, it's such a clean logo. We can put it on clothing and people are going to buy our clothing. And it's not really related to the soccer team anymore. It's so much bigger than that. It was a J. It was a J. It was a J with another little...
It's a sexy looking
little,
J,
with,
though.
With little mark.
It's so the sex appeal. You have to sell them on the sex appeal.
So that it kind of looked like a shield, which kind of looks like a Scudetto logo, which is a big thing in Italy. That was the whole redesign, and it was horrible. I hated it. Their fans hated it. People were making fun of it almost immediately because if you flip the J upside down, it looks like an L. And so every time they would lose, people were just like posting the upside down logo and just saying and just sending it to people. Cincinnati could have hired any design firm in the country. They could have hired local Cincinnati artists like we did to have input in this. They hired a company that has a Cincinnati-based office, but they didn't have the Cincinnati-based office actually design the logo. They had the office in Milan, Italy, design the logo, which makes zero sense. And then they released this crest guide, which is hilariously bad. So if you haven't seen the crest,
it rivals
I'll just kind of
the
break
Austin
it down for
FC
you.
Like guide.
It's no, it's better. Weird. It's better than Austin FC.
Well, the whole crest is weird. So I'm not a design expert, but you got two shades of blue on this thing for no apparent reason. The FC and the Cincinnati are different fonts for some reason. I don't know what. You've got a lion on there
it's
with a crown
and German.
And the crown, the lion is apparently a female because the crown represents the queen city. So this is a queen lion.
But they were calling it Gary last night.
With a queen lion with a mane, which I don't know if that's how it
you're
works.
Right. Yeah. So I don't really know. But then you got the sword, which they say the sword represents the fact that they are ready for battle. So we have already lost because we don't have a sword on our logo. And so the fight's already lost. And then they've got the mane, which represents the seven hills of Cincinnati, even though there are four hills on the mane. So I'm not sure how that works. You've got the wing that's got three feathers because of three seasons before they joined Major League Soccer. That's dumb and stupid, and they should not have done that.
How much of this is just reverse engineered?
I think all of it is.
Yeah.
Because literally, my favorite part is that they have the tail. The last one is pointing to the tail, and it says C for Cincinnati. That's my favorite, and it summarizes this whole thing. It is the most soulless, awful design I have seen in a very long time from this league. It really reminds me of some of the crap that they were putting out. It's like the RSL logo in a lot of ways. Like when Real Salt Lake became Real Salt Lake, and everybody was like, why are you calling them Real Salt Lake? They're in Salt Lake City, Utah. This makes no sense. It really has a vibe like that. People were saying that it looks like the fake PES logos that are in the video game for the teams where they don't have the licenses. So instead of it being like Arsenal, it's London Cannons and stuff like that. It looks like one of those. My favorite explanation of it was that it looks like the hood emblem of an inexpensive antique car. I really enjoyed that one. But in general, it's horrible. No disrespect to Alex Steck because she is wonderful and she had nothing to do with this project. It would have been better if Alex Steck just scribbled something on the back of a napkin and that they just did that. But in all honesty, it is terrible. I'm not really sure why they did it. I'm not really sure why they're doing a lot of things they've been doing recently. They've had a lot of long-time journalists and long-time fans and things like that that they've kind of shunned in a lot of ways. Since they made this big push for Major League Soccer. In a lot of ways, it's pretty sad. I'm not sure how it's going to pan out for them. But I think a lot of the things that got them there, that got them to where they are right now, they're turning their backs on. And they're trying to go the NFL route. And I don't know why teams keep doing this. This is not the NFL. You have to treat your fans differently in soccer than you do in other sports. And I'm really not sure the ownership group in Cincinnati is grasping that yet. They'll have time to turn things around, but this is a really bad first step. And yeah, I really think the logo's that bad. I think it signals bad things to come for Cincinnati, but we'll see.
I'm not a big fan of the logo. I think it's a regression. USL logo had its issues, but I think it's loss. And DJ Switzer from Wrong Side of the Pond, who used to work for the team and did some design work for them, had a nice article on his site that I think you should check out if you have some ideas about where maybe FC Cincinnati missed out or kind of left some things on the table that they could have picked up on. But I think the other news that was interesting was the way that they're looking to build their roster. I think this is a team that is on a slow ramp up into MLS because I think they said that they were bringing in 8 or 9 different USL players from their roster, which is more than recent joinees from USL or people coming up, teams coming up from lower leagues to MLS. You know, that's more than Minnesota United did. Yeah. So I think this is interesting that you're going to have a team that is definitely not going to be as strong as some of these other teams. They were a fantastic USL team and they have some MLS players that they're going to be bringing up, and that doesn't even include Alashi or Fernando Adi. But I think that they're going to have to fill that roster in, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. It's definitely a little bit of a modification about how they were looking to enter. They're not going to have a third designated player to start with. I think it's just going to be interesting on how they do that, or second. I'm actually not sure. I know Audi's one.
Can we also talk about how annoying it is that they're spending $200 million on the stadium, and yet we have to have another expansion draft where they take 5 players that are all going to probably earn less than $100,000 each?
At least they don't take anyone from us. This
they
is the
don't
first
take
expansion draft I remember that we haven't lost somebody.
Yeah, but it still is so annoying to me that you're going to say, oh, well, we're going to give you 5 players, as if they can't go out and find 5 players. They literally can go anywhere in the world and find 5 players in an afternoon for a tiny, tiny percent of the money that they're spending on this, you know, shiny new stadium. So I think that they need to do away with that. I think it's, I don't know. It's not NFL where you literally only have this player pool to pick from, and so you have to divvy it up. There are 20 other markets you can pull from and pay players. So I don't know. I don't see the point in it. I think it's a relic of a bygone era. At least it should be a bygone era.
No, I definitely agree with you with that. And for what it's worth, man, it like the crest, it looks like the MLS logo. You know how like each team has their own branded version of the logo that has like their colors? I mean, it literally just looks like they, you know, replaced the MLS and the stars in the top corner and then just like did a clip art winged lion in the bottom corner in the white part, and then, you know, stretched that little line out in a little bit, you know, in the middle there, and just kind of distorted it a bit so it's not quite the perfect MLS shield. And they're like, there you go, we're FC Cincy, ready to go. It's, you know, that being said, can I just say how thrilled I am and how much I'm looking forward to, you know, not only just be able to enjoy and really invest in this rivalry and for years and years to come in MLS, and also just to feel the burden lifted off of us now that the season's over, now that for all intents and purposes, the crew are in fact saved, that we can finally go back to hating every other team in MLS again, starting with our new neighbors down 90 minutes to the south.
Yeah, screw those guys. Screw them. And, you know, they should get on their front office right now about a rebrand and just do it right now instead of waiting a couple years. They should just, at the very least, I saw somebody do this on Twitter, just cover up the lion with a photo of Skyline Chili or something like that. I mean, that's bare minimum. That takes 2 seconds to do. Put Pete Rose's face over it, something. You can figure it out. They can figure it out. They have some smart people in Cincinnati, not a lot, but there are some. There are a few.
I think that you can't understate. There's a lot of different things that the new crew. We talked a little bit about what you know we might be seeing the team spend here within the next 5 to 10 years, stadium infrastructure, players, but having a rival that is not 5 hours away. With the Chicago Fire looking to other teams, maybe more so than Columbus, sets up something that's special that you've seen really kind of take off in other parts of the league. You know, LA with two teams, New York with two teams. You have Seattle and Portland, and to a lesser extent, Vancouver with some deep seated rivalry. You have all these other possible groups like Atlanta and Nashville, I think, have the beginnings of a beautiful hatred, so to speak. These are interesting and fun things that you have these teams that are so close that you can travel that Columbus Crew fans have never had. I think that this is going to be yet another part of something that's brand new.
One other thing that we didn't talk about, are we going to talk about the ticket prices? Did you guys see that?
Oh no, please lead that one.
Okay, so FC Cincinnati have announced their ticket prices for next season. For the season tickets, you can get general admission season tickets to an FC Cincinnati year for $199. And the family section's at $255. So $11.71 per game for general admission tickets, which... we were told, Crew fans were told, that the ticket prices that they had, which the cheapest tickets are around $320 in the ballpark there for season tickets, were league minimum, and that they were not allowed by Major League Soccer to go any lower than that, which apparently was a lie, because FC Cincinnati is selling season tickets for more than $100 cheaper than that. So that's something to note as well. Thank you, front office, for lying to us on that and for letting our neighbors undercut our ticket prices by a full third. So that's something to discuss.
So I do know, as I understand it, FC Cincinnati will be increasing ticket prices, as I understand it, over the course of the next 2 to 3 seasons as they look to enter the new stadium to normalize from USL prices to Major League Soccer prices. So much like LAFC had some really cheap ticket prices this 2017-2018 season, renewals are going up significantly. I think that these ticket prices are too low. I think that you're kind of setting yourself up to lock in, and you would need to increase ticket prices to be not necessarily competitive, but I'd also understand why MLS would be a little bit upset about seeing $11 tickets out there for your major league quote unquote major league product. So I think those are two interesting things to see as they go along and as they move to their new West End stadium, what those end up finalizing at. And frankly, I think that Columbus might be going through some similar process as we look towards a new stadium here within the next 5 years, that it wouldn't necessarily be a surprise that they try to firm up ticket prices if they're able to get more people in the stadium, which I think is vital for the health of this team long term. I think it will happen. I've been bullish on local ownership having a downtown stadium. And I look forward to the times when Columbus and Cincinnati will be trading off 2-3 times a year, depending on how they do the scheduling. We might finally be getting down to just everybody plays twice, which is a shame because I'd like to see Cincinnati 3 times. That'd be fun.
I just think if you're going to make exceptions for other teams, and I get the logic behind letting FC Cincinnati gradually raise ticket prices, I also think that you should make an exception for Columbus and let us lower our ticket prices for a season. And say, hey, sorry about Anthony Precourt. Sorry about all the stuff you guys had to go through for the last year. Give us another shot. Come on out and see us. Maybe that would help boost ticket sales. I think it's hard, even with the new ownership group, to convince some people that this is totally over. I know that the wounds are still fresh for a lot of people while they're trying to sell these tickets. People are still, you know, I hear from people on a weekly basis still saying, well, are they really staying? Are you sure they're really staying? I know that the owner said that they're staying, but are they really staying? I think even after there's an official announcement, we're going to be hearing about that until at least the summer from people who just aren't quite sure. There have been a lot of bridges burned, and it's going to take time to rebuild those. I think something like that would help get people back in and give things another chance. But yeah, it's always weird to see these new teams get special rules and then have to kind of, you know, deal with being the old guy who doesn't get these special exceptions.
Well, it's certainly going to be something, though, that fans have to look forward to in 2019. But I do want to take it a little bit back to this past season. Now, you know, we're talking about it in the past tense as Crew, you know, dropped that game to New York last season. So where do you, you know, what are some final thoughts on this 2018 season? Overachieving, underachieving? You know, satisfied, happy with the results. It was such a roller coaster, and that's a terrible cliche, but it's still an accurate descriptor. So I want to hear from everybody on, you know, what will certainly go down as one of, if not the most memorable, albeit maybe not for all the right reasons, Crew seasons for Crew fans.
I think it was just decidedly weird. It's impossible to separate off the field from on the field. It's with all the swirl that comes with the possibility of the team not being here in 2019, game after game. And I remember being on the concourses during some games, you know, midweek against Atlanta, where, you know, the people that are in the stadium are the people that know exactly where things stand. And that was right before a vote in Austin or a possible vote in Austin. And it was just this this drag on how things on the outlook. And, the team kept fighting. You know, the people in the stands kept fighting. But, you know, there was a certain amount of joy that was lost until, you know, October. And I have to say that my memory is going to be the last game of the season. The Legends game, the tailgating before the game, that game against Minnesota, even with the delay, that it's a glimpse of Crew soccer future. And I'm going to leave that as my lasting memory, my thought about how 2018 unfolded with a little bit of a valediction and a triumph.
Yeah, you know, I agree with Patrick on that too, is that, you know, it was an interesting season that, you know, you didn't know necessarily what was going to happen. And it just, from our perspective, and I could speak for Patrick too, I think, you know, talking to some of the staffers on a game day experience, you know, they weren't enjoying it. And, you know, I can speak from my perspective that, you know, if somebody's not enjoying something, I automatically, the human inside of me just kind of automatically feels down, you know? So these young kids, some of these staffers, some senior members of the team, you know, saw the writing on the wall and they knew something was up. And, you know, it just wasn't a fun season. The fun was kind of starting to get out of it a little bit. You know, you didn't know how much more you were going to be able to do this. And then, you know, that news comes on October 12th, you know, and it was a completely different atmosphere, walking into that Minnesota game. You know, these interns were in there talking about, you know, hey, we might have a job next year, or, you know, the people that have been around for a while, you know, the photo marshals that deal with me and Sam pretty frequently, I'm sure some of the associates that help, the two Patricks, you know, everybody, was walking around with a little bit more pep in their step and a little more swagger. Senior members of the team that were, you know, less than enthused 6 months ago were walking around smiling. I hadn't seen so many smiles after that. That's a memory that I will take with me. It's been really cool to kind of be along the process. It was long. admittedly, too, I've been on the record saying that I didn't think this was going to pan out, but it did. And I'm very happy to be wrong and to be having a Columbus Crew SC season next year.
It was, in a lot of ways, the worst season I've ever experienced. And I've been a fan since the beginning. But in a lot of ways, it's also been the best. I think that for me, the best memory that I had as a Columbus soccer fan prior to all of this stuff happening was the Dos Azero Tifo sweat that we did. And for those who were not involved with that, it was really kind of an amazing process. You had all these people coming together to do this art that we had never tried to do before. And everybody was chipping in and just doing what they could. A lot of us were not great artists, but people would bring pizza or they would bring something to drink. I mean, it was just a great collaborative event. And a lot of people thought that it wasn't going to work out or that something was going to go wrong, and it didn't. You know, we did it. And I remember after that game, sitting down in the shed where we were keeping a bunch of our stuff, and was completely exhausted, but just grinning ear to ear. And we were just kind of like, okay, we did it. And that process multiplied emotionally by a million was what this whole process has been for me. I thought from the moment that we were on those City Hall steps and I was singing, you know, Columbus with everybody up there, that we were going to save this team. But to see it actually happen and to see the process by which it happened has been one of the most amazing, inspiring experiences of my life. The on-the-field stuff basically doesn't matter to me at all. The team that matters to me this season is not the 11 guys on the pitch, but it's the countless people off the pitch who pitched in and helped make Save the Crew a reality. And not just fans. I mean, the fans did a heck of a lot. You know, John Zidar, Morgan Hughes, Darby, all those guys, they did a ton. But there were politicians and lawyers and legal experts and random, you know, citizens and all kinds of people in the business community who just stepped up when they needed to step up and say, you know what, this might have happened in dozen other cities around the country and a dozen other sports, but it's not going to happen in Columbus. We're not going to let it happen in Columbus. We're going to come together. We're going to figure stuff out and we're going to get through this. And we did. And to be a part of that and to see that happen here, just really reinforces the best of this city. And, you know, I tell people who I know who have never been to Columbus, you know, you can knock it as a cow town. You can knock it as flyover country. You can knock it however you want. There's something special here, and I really don't know what it is, but we are a big, small town, and we protect ourselves, and we look out for each other, and we look out for the city. And you know, whatever happened on the field this year, I don't think I'll remember any of it. You know, my favorite memory, like Patrick, it was that Legends game, and it was all the Save the Crew events, and especially that day at Endeavor. It's been something else. And we went through a lot of hell to get to that end of the year, that fall. The spring and summer sucked. But I will never forget that fall. And I will cherish that. And stories will be told for generations about what we did this year, what we as Crew fans did, what we as Columbus citizens did. And the memories of any sort of trophies we would win, they would fade, but I don't think this is going to fade. I think this is going to be important for a long time.
I mean, for what it's worth, I would have been thrilled with a trophy too, but
yeah, of course.
I do, you know, I do, you know, like just everything everyone else has been saying. I think that it was surreal. I mean, I had, you know, my family barbecue where this past weekend, where, you know, a year ago prior, that's when I just showed Mike Duffy an email that I'd gotten from one of my beer league buddies, you know, Dave Mirren, that had the ORC 967. And, you know, that we were kind of sitting down enjoying some beer and some smoked meat last Saturday and thinking, you know, God, man, that was a year ago. And the fact that, the fact that we as a fan base had to go through this, that's still angering. And I don't know that will ever go away. At least for me personally, but even the anger with just even being put in that situation, is outdone by the sheer joy and bliss of seeing, this group, you know, the little guys winning, and really the little guys winning, not something else. It's we beat the machine, and an MLS Cup would have been awesome. It would have been even more storybook ending, but that was a little far to ask for, given everything else and given the sheer unprecedented, of what we were able to accomplish. The collective, everybody, all the Crew fans and supporters, that fought to keep this team and fought, what the league and what, Anthony Precourt most specifically, were trying to do. And, you know, even the letdown in what, you know, maybe, we think and hope this team could have accomplished, should have accomplished in 2018. It can't overshadow, what the fans and the supporters accomplished throughout the year. And everyone else, all the other stakeholders and contributors throughout this process, truly incredible, and will make for, one of the most memorable season I think in my life, you know, surpassing even 2018, at least for me, for the Crew, just in terms of, you know, everything that everyone put in and poured into this team in this season. And although, you know, MLS Cup not in the cards, I'll take that trade off, and I'll take, you know, a lifetime of Columbus Crew soccer moving forward. Any other, you know, final thoughts on 2018, or can we, turn forward to 2019 and what we're looking forward to seeing and what we think and what other changes might be in store?
Get me out of this year. Let's move on. On Excelsior.
To lead us off, Ralph, what are you expecting to see in 2019?
Oh God. I didn't know you were going to put me on the spot like that, but, 2019, man, I'll tell you, I think, you know, and maybe you guys can kind of touch on this too a little bit. Maybe you guys share the same feelings, but I think there's going to be a lot of optimism around this team. Mainly, you know, they have that age old saying that there's no such thing as bad publicity. I think this whole saga will go a long way in creating new fans, creating new memories, and just kind of getting new folks exposed to the sport. I think that this will be very exciting. I think that there will be a period of even growth. Obviously, there's going to be a period of kind of repairing the relationship between the franchise and the city, even though, you know, we're taking great steps with having Dr. Pete Edwards stick in there and become part of the management group to kind of oversee team operations. I think that 2019 is going to be a year of growth. And I think, you know, just my way too early prediction is that, you know, you're going to see a lot more first time fans out at Mafre, because of this whole situation, that, you know, people are going to kind of take civic pride in this and kind of say, you know, this is my city. My city did this. They saved their team. And, you know, people will be coming out, you know, similar to what you see with folks coming out to Clippers games. They don't go out to Clippers games because, you know, they're not devout Clippers fans. I mean, there may be some people that are that case, but, you know, people go out to Clippers games because it's, you know, it represents their city. And I think Columbus Crew SC are going to do a really nice job of representing Central Ohio, representing the city, going forward. And I think they're going to be positive role models in the community.
I just think it's so great that we are having this conversation about what next year is going to be like. The fact that all those kids that I see every week in Mavre Stadium are going to have a team to go to have players to look up to. That's really the thing that I'm looking forward to the most. As far as the on the field stuff is concerned, I'm not super worried about it at this point. Maybe I will be closer to the time that the actual season starts. But whenever you have a change in coaching, and it looks like that's going to happen, I kind of write off that first year as a growing year anyway. I'll cut whoever the new coach is a lot of extra slack, given the fact that ownership will be changing as well. Overall, I think that the fans are going to be just thrilled to be in the stadium. I think it'll be interesting to see how the players who are returning react to everything. But, you know, it's almost too early for me to speculate on this. I'm still in the kind of saved the crew mode. And once that announcement hits officially and everything is final and the ink is dry, I'm just going to enjoy that for at least 6 months. And then maybe by middle of the year, towards the end of the summer transfer window, I'll start worrying about on the field again. But for now, I'm just going to try to enjoy it.
I think one point that I want to make sure that we touch on, and I know we don't want to, you know, speculate too much on what might happen the off season player personnel wise, but we would be remiss. We've talked about the possibility that, you know, the likelihood that Greg Berhalter is gone, the possibility that Zach Steffen will also be leaving for Europe potentially in the off season, and another person who's been linked with it and who we almost criminally haven't mentioned, I don't believe, on this podcast is Will Trapp. The chance that may be the final game he ever plays in black and gold, or at least for Columbus, and that he could potentially, he did get a Greek passport over the summer, and he's been linked, you know, obviously was linked at the transfer deadline with potentially leaving, and, you know, what it could mean. Can we just talk a little bit about Will Trapp, what he meant for this team throughout this season, and thoughts on the chance of him not being and not captaining this team in 2019, and how you fill that void, not just as a player and what he contributes on the field as one of the best holding midfielders in MLS, you know, maybe one of the future guys, future captain potentially for the U.S. team, but what you miss, you know, what the void that they'll have to fill elsewhere, you know, even if it's just for fans, as the guy who's the fan, the hometown kid, who was sticking up for this team, albeit, you know, with that little hiccup the first day, in that first press conference, who's really kind of the subversive fighting for the Save the Crew and those fans throughout the season, and then, you know, getting even more vocal as things progress throughout the season.
I just don't know if he's actually going to want to leave. You know, he's been a big supporter of Save the Crew, although quietly so. And he's been a fan of this team since he was a kid. You know, he did not make any public comment. His family members were fairly vocal about things. His sister had posted a picture of him and Will at a game when he was a kid, and she said, you know, please save our team. I think he's going to want to be here for that first game of 2019. Whether he leaves in the summer or not, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see what the offers are. And if those are enticing to him. But I'm feeling like Will might end up being a one club player. I would love to see him stay and spend his entire career here in Columbus. I'm not sure if that's something that he would want or not. I know he's a Liverpool fan, and Steven Gerrard is his favorite player. Steven Gerrard probably should have been a one club player and made a mistake by coming out to LA and messing that up. But I wonder if he'll want to emulate that and want to stick it out. I certainly hope he does. I hope he considers that. But I would love to see him back next season, and I'm proud to have him wear that armband.
It's really hard to say what's in his mind. I don't know if this is a perfect time with a possible coaching change that is kind of a chance for him to make a change. I think some players might be looking at that, especially if they really valued what Greg was able to bring to their game, or it's time for another challenge. But it was a case where you're losing the biggest tie to the community if Will leaves. The person who sells the most jerseys, the most recognizable name, on the roster for most people, and an upper echelon central midfielder who's able to control the game with his ability to pass and with his ability to kind of control things in a Pirlo-esque way rather than maybe a Tyler Adams way. You saw what Adams was able to do on Sunday. This is a case where I think Will's going to have some time to think about it. Going to have some time to try to figure out if there's a move to be made and if he wants to make that move. But off the field, on the field, him moving on would be a tremendous loss to the team because he's one of the key cogs that makes this team run the way it does.
Certainly would be a huge loss for this team and make whether it's Josh Wolf, whether it's Craig Berhalter, I don't think anyone really believes that, but whomever is manning the touch lines for this team next year, their job is that much harder without Will Trapp as an option. But I certainly would not fault Will for pursuing an opportunity if he has it. As a guy who also wants to see the U.S. team do well, and if Will's still a guy that is in the works for that, I think it might be in his best interest as well to pursue next level. But we'll see, and certainly Will's accomplishments and contributions to this franchise will not be forgotten whatsoever. There's so much, more that we can talk about for 2019, but we might have to save it for 2019. So I'll say, are there any other parting shots, final points, if you want to tie a little bow on this season as well, a parting shot. This is your opportunity. No predictions this week.
Big thing is I don't want to get sentimental for a second, but kudos to everybody who really stuck around and kept the faith about the whole situation, because talking to a lot of folks who aren't really directly involved with the situation, I'm talking about my parents or the relative that you walk into it, like a family gathering, everybody kind of says, so are they moving? It was very easy to kind of get down about the whole situation, but for the fact that so many people stayed so positive and continued to work tireless hours, and who knows how much lost productivity happened at jobs, and stuff like that. But, to the folks that were really tied to the Save the Crew effort and that really worked, it was a lot of people, but, to those people that stayed so dedicated to the cause, I tip my cap to you, because that was a grueling process. It was tough to watch from my perspective as well. But the fact that fans were out there supporting, whether it was Phil DeFray or the Chris Initiative or the various Save the Crew nights with Cleveland FC and the Columbus Eagles. It was really cool to see the community involvement. And the one thing I truly marvel is, how everybody was able to keep this cause in front of every camera and with positive publicity and literally just taking the high road every time that they were presented with an offer to take the low road and kind of meet some troll down there. it was really a great public relations effort, and, you know, kudos to everybody who stayed the course. Thank you for supporting us for another season, supporting the website, giving us, you know, a chance to talk about the team that we love to talk about with you guys. From my perspective and from my chair, it was a pleasure.
Well, in 2019 fashion, I'm going to stop being quite so sappy, and might as well start now by saying I hope everyone loses MLS Cup. I hope they don't award it to anyone. I hate all the teams who are still in the running for it. So hope
that's a good point.
I hope everyone loses. Just
the meteoroid.
Don't give it to anyone. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just don't give it to anyone.
I think that's, and we were talking about this a little bit offline, we won't get into it, but I think actually, like, I had settled on, if we're going to have to support, if I was going to have to support one team winning an MLS Cup, it would be SKC, just because that would keep New York and Atlanta from getting a star, and it would keep Portland from getting another star, an additional star more than Columbus has. But I'm going to go with Alex's again, and yeah, meteorite, destroy it, no MLS Cup this year. Patrick, thoughts on 2018 and going into 2019?
Well, just one. You know, as the season ends, there's always next year. And it was only in the last month that we could say that, so there's always next year.
There's always next year, and there's always next year, because there are thousands of dedicated and passionate supporters of this team, and dozens of them listen to this podcast, and we appreciate each and every one of them. And so on behalf of Ralph, of Patrick, of Alex, of Patrick Murphy, of you know, everyone who's been on this throughout the year, of course Sam Fahmy, all of our guests, want to thank everybody so much for listening throughout. We are so happy to be saying that we will see you next year, and until then, bye buddies.